I'm happiest in the saddle.
A fellow sportsman.
I am an FBI agent.
Great Scott. What do you say we cut the chit-chat? A-hole.
Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Come with me if you want to live.
Hello, and welcome to Retro Ramble. I'm Charlie McGee.
I'm George McGee.
And this time, dear listeners, we are traveling all the way back to the 90s. It's 1995 to review the classic. He gave you Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton. He can't do any wrong. Congo.
Yes, so from the writer of Jurassic Park and the producer of Jurassic Park and Indiana Jones comes Congo. And you can see why, on paper, people like, shut up and take my money.
Yeah, I mean, especially this is coming hot off the heels of Jurassic Park in a way, right?
Very much so, almost like it was riding the hype train. But we'll get into that. So yes, we are covering Frank Marshall's, Michael Crichton's, but he's not involved directly, Congo.
So what can our listeners expect, George? It's 1995. You could be sitting around wondering what type of Jurassic Park type film is coming. Will it feature gorillas? We're some ways away from the Andy Serkis.
Oh, we're a long way off.
We're a long way from Andy Serkis in this film.
Yeah, it's a very interesting time because obviously it's still early days of CGI. This film has a lot of prosthetics and animatronics, which we'll get into. But yes, I think after obviously last month we covered The Terminator, which is a stone cold classic. It's, you know, one of the biggest films of its genre, of its era. So we decided to mix it up by doing Congo, a film that maybe some people haven't seen, or you haven't. I certainly hadn't watched it in a long while. But I remember it being a lot of fun. For some reasons intentional, others not so intentional.
Amy, no like, bad CGI. Amy.
So, bad, ugly.
Bad, ugly. So we're going to get jumping right into it. We're going to play the trailer. It's 1995. I'm just trying to think about what type of trailer can we expect. Have you had a pre-listen?
I have. It's proper voice guy, deep voice guy. So we're still in that. I mean, I say it's peak 90s. We're right at 95. We're right in the middle. So there's a lot of fun to be had in the trailer and beyond. However, some disclaimers for those of you, if you haven't listened to the podcast before. The purpose of this podcast is Charlie and I, we are brothers, and we look back at the films of our youth. What made them so great? Do they still stand up? Have they been remade, spun off into a series? So it's a lighthearted look back at these films. There'll be some trivia dotted in along the way. But yeah, I say lighthearted rather than a full-on critical appraisal. There might be some swearing. There might be some childish impressions and language, so apologies in advance.
Yeah, you have been warned. You just made me think there about the fact that the 90s was probably, the late 90s was when we probably didn't realise we were about to say goodbye to the voiceover guy. Mm. But it starts to make me think, how do they get away with it now? Like, are they literally putting lines into movies that they know they can feature in the trailer? I bet some films are.
The stuff that, yeah, people are picking apart now, it's so analytical. People are saying, oh, well, that line from the trailer's not in the film. Or obviously, you know, like stuff yes. like Star Wars, people are like critically going through it and saying, that scene, that critical scene that you tease me on, or the Avengers, is not in the film. So, yeah, trailers are an art form in themselves and have become, I think because they've been so overly analysed, yeah, it's a form of, you know, an art form in itself in terms of editing.
Yeah, because we've gone from the teaser trailer to the full-blown trailer to the official trailer to the official trailer part two to the second.
Yeah.
Official trailer.
My pet hate, the teaser for the teaser trailer.
So without any further ado, let's get on it. It's Congo. It's nuts. It's Tim Curry. It's who else is in this? Is it Lana Linney?
Laura Linney. We've got Delroy Lindo in a very short cameo. We've got the amazing Ernie Hudson.
Him and Tim Curry are having a great time.
Bruce Campbell in a cameo. And obviously
Don Baker.
Yes, we've chatted about Joe Don Baker if you know your Bond films, you know Joe Don Baker. So yeah, there's a few familiar faces. I mean, I wouldn't say there's any huge stars in this because the monkey is the star. But more on that later.
For the world's most advanced communications technology. A shocking discovery has been made.
What was that?
Lock your remote, give me a thermal reading result to 6-6.
It will take two young scientists into the heart of the African jungle. Where a secret hidden for 2,000 years holds the key to the future.
This is Karen Ross. 1452 Houston, do you read?
You used to work for the CIA, and now you're tropical.
Some will come to it for science.
This is a big deal, Charles. This is a big find.
Some for fortune.
A diamond mine of incredible bounty.
And some to return home.
She doesn't really belong anywhere, does she?
No, she belongs here.
Together, they will search.
My boss, he thought I wasn't going to make it. He sent another expedition.
Drawn deep into a mystery.
Camp destroyed. People dead. A gray gorilla.
No such thing as a gray gorilla.
I saw one.
And the more they discover,
the same hieroglyphics over and over,
the greater the danger.
What do they say?
We are watching you.
Saw an animal move like that.
Shoot it! How intelligent are they?
See, they're smart. They're too damn smart.
Watch out! Go!
We're getting out of here.
What about them?
Put them on the endangered species list.
From the best-selling novel by the author of Jurassic Park.
The myth of the killer ape is true.
Congo, where you are the endangered species.
It makes no sense. That's why it's amazing. Absolutely zero sense made.
There's everything you want. There's monkeys, there's lasers, there's Tim Curry, you know. What more can it
go? Delroy Lindo, Ernie Hudson. Yeah, I'm in. I forgot that Delroy Lindo was in this film.
I think he forgets.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
What is coming on?
I forgot that he was in it. I did not forget that Tim Curry was in it or that Ernie Hudson. But I think what I want to premise this entire review with, because I know we're going to go to some interesting places with this film, is that it's come up a lot on, we'll be reviewing a certain film and George or I will say, so-and-so, he thinks he's in another movie.
Yeah.
And this is the first film where multiple characters are in it's like they keep dropping in. Oh, you're still making that movie? Yeah, I'm making the other one. Are you still making this one? Yeah, I'm making that one. It's like, it's nuts.
Absolutely. Oh, we forgot about, speaking of someone that drops in and out, and doesn't really have much of an impact. Joey Pants.
I mentioned Joey Pants. I think I was just texting you names as they appeared as I was watching it.
So, should we do first memories first?
You go first, because I don't remember anything about this. I remember you being intrigued. I think because you'd seen it at the cinema. You talked this film up a lot. You and I sat down and watched it, and I was like, what happened? I don't have any... I just don't remember it as being crazy. Always just being very, very strange.
So, yeah, I would have been... I was, prime, right in my, early teen. I would have been, 12, 13. I remember this was like, you know, at that stage where I was going to the cinema by myself with my mates, going to the mall, going to the Metro Center at the,
so,
the
old, no old, parents, just yeah, you. Yeah.
Freedom. So I remember going with my good old friend, Tom McKechnie. And yeah, it was that stage where probably from like 12 to 15, 16, where you felt like you were pretty much going to the cinema every week, if not
it was
like every other
weekend.
Week.
Yeah, yeah. You were just happy to be allowed in.
And that's it.
You'd watch anything.
And that, at that age, yeah, you would watch anything. But with this one, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, because obviously Jurassic Park had, you know, was such an influence. It was like, oh, yeah, it's like a new Jurassic Park type thing. And I think it was a 12, there was probably obviously that lure of, oh, yeah, it's going to be better because it's 12. It's going to be violent. It's got horror elements. But I remember when watching it, laughing at how silly it was at the tender age of 12 years old. I remember, yeah, my mate Tom and I, especially when she pulls out the diamond-powered laser gun and just starts blasting angry apes away, we were just like, what is going on in this film?
How did it go from being a communication, it's going to put the communications race ahead by 25 years to, oh, a ad hoc, as you need it, laser gun?
It's communications, but also lasers. So, yeah, I remember it being daft. And it's one of those films that I say I haven't watched it in ages, but it is a guilty pleasure for me. I remember it being a lot of fun. And, you know, it's not obviously, you know, we have, as I was saying in the, you know, pre-trailer chat, we've covered some Stone Cold classics on this podcast, but we have to mix it up. And whilst this film isn't going to win any awards, it's a bit of a curiosity in, you know, considering the talent, you know, behind the camera, and obviously it's Michael Crichton and all the people in it. I think it's an interesting curiosity, but yeah, it's also batshit crazy.
I would call this a performance piece, and by that I mean that you get a performance out of Tim Curry, which is legendary considering his back catalogue.
Yeah.
It's right up there with all the other crazy stuff he's done. Ernie Hudson, one of his biggest films.
Yeah.
And one of his most leading roles. You've even got, you know, you got Del Roy, you mentioned, you've got Joey Pants, you've got Joe Don Baker. So like it ticks a lot of, and you've got Amy, yeah, like ugly gorilla, bad.
Well, what can we'll get into it, but what connects? Actually, there is a connection to Terminator, and it's Stan Winston. So Stan Winston does all the monkey effects.
So we were very much in the this is the chasm.
Yep.
We were very much in the chasm between CGI and stop motion physical effects.
Yes. So this actually dates back to the late 70s. This is all sort of news to me, but obviously Michael Crichton's been around for quite some time, and I think probably he only came up on our radar growing up with Jurassic Park because that was such a phenomenon.
I don't know. Yeah. At 11 years old, I just couldn't put down Disclosure. It was just a great read. Great read as a kid. Yeah, it was Jurassic Park.
It was all about Jurassic Park for us. But yeah, he'd been around since the 70s. So I think the first adaptation of his work was The Andromeda Strain, which was a hit film back in 1971. But then Crichton himself, he's a triple threat because he's obviously a novelist, but he's also a film director and a scriptwriter. So he made his film debut with Westworld in 1973.
Nuts.
And then he would go on to adapt one of his own novels. So Westworld wasn't a novel, it was just a straight film for him. But in 1979, he did The Great Train Robbery with Sean Connery. And I haven't seen that. And I'm sure we'll probably have some listeners writing in saying, what do you mean you haven't seen this?
I've seen bits of it.
It's been on my to-watch list for ages. It might be a retro ramble revelation at some point. But anyway, Crichton has a positive experience writing the screenplay and working with Connery. So he wants to do something with him again. And he starts thinking up a jungle adventure in the spirit of King Solomon's Mines called Congo. And he says, besides updating like King Solomon's mines, he wanted to make use of the research of sign language for primates. So he starts working about the idea. And before, in true Hollywood fashion, before he's even written the novel, he pitches it to the studio, to 20th Century Fox, who sign it off and give him $1.5 million for the rights. The novel comes out in 1980 and he starts pre-production in 1981. Fox are really happy with his script, but Michael Crichton holds up pre-production because he is adamant he wants to use a real ape for Amy, a gorilla capable of communicating via sign language. Spoiler alert, he doesn't find one.
Mr. Crichton, that technology doesn't exist yet.
Well, make it happen. So yes, he said it's, you know, Amy's one of the main characters. She's on screen the whole time. She better be charming. You better not see human eyes. You can't have Rick Baker in a monkey suit. And Rick Baker at this time, he'd obviously done American Werewolf, but he'd done the effects for King Kong, the King Kong remake with Jeff Bridges in the 70s as well. And he spent like a few years trying to find this perfect ape.
The missing link, so to speak.
Yeah, and unable to, he steps down from the project. But Fox is like, well, we're going to go ahead and we'll shop it around to other directors. I'll get into which directors are considered, but unsurprisingly, one of them is Steven Spielberg.
Can you do the Steven Spielberg magic, please, Steven? Because you've done it before with dinosaurs. What could possibly go wrong?
And well, that's it. The even Spielberg was like, well, you know, I've done Sharks. By this point, he'd done E.T. And then even Crichton, because I think they were friends by this point. They were like, Crichton was like, yeah, but this isn't a creature. This is, you know, a walking, talking thing. It's different. And by 1983... Michael Crichton, in a press release, says Congo is a dead project that will never be made.
Over my dead ape hand.
Yeah, so he says it's not, never be made. Cut to 4 years later, and Crichton is promoting his novel Sphere, which would obviously go on to become a film in the like 97, I think.
It was the year of the greatest.
And he has a change of heart, says, yeah, the film's finally going to be made this year. But nothing happens. So it languishes with Fox for 5 years until around 92, when producing a couple and real life couple, Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall, buy the rights to it during the production of Jurassic Park, which they're also producing. So they realize, hang on, this, you know, everyone's, you know, the hype for Jurassic Park was huge. And so they were like, okay, this is going to be, you know, the next big one. And the studios are going to be clamoring over to have it. And so I think Paramount must have bought it off Fox. Fox had it for so long. But yes, critically, Crichton is not involved in the production whatsoever. That it's even asked in a press release, and Kathleen Kennedy says, Michael sold the rights a few years ago. He's not involved in this movie. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a sore point for Michael Crichton because he was so keen to make it. But I think because of seeing the stuff done with Jurassic Park, it made them think, well, yeah, we can have a crack at this. If we can do dinosaurs, we can do monkeys. They bring on a scriptwriter, John Patrick Shanley, who is an Oscar winner. He won the Oscar for Moonstruck, but he also wrote Alive for Frank Marshall, which is a Frank Marshall film.
She didn't get an Oscar for, but he got an Oscar for Moonstruck.
Yeah. And he also wrote and directed Joe Versus the Volcano, which was a film for Amblin, which was produced by Spielberg and Kennedy and Marshall.
So it's Tom Hanks.
Yes, and Meg Ryan. Yeah. It's a good film, I think. I haven't seen it in a long time. But yeah, essentially, he was a trusted quantity by Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy. But they sent him the book and they were like, so what do you think? And he was like, I like the title. He just didn't like the story at all. And they were like, but you'd be happy to write it, right? And he was like, he felt like he, out of loyalty to them, I'll do it. But the one thing I want to change is the Great White Hunter, this role that had been originally earmarked for Sean Connery, he goes, he has to be black. He goes, I can't do this thing where this white guy is telling all these black people what to do. I just can't bring myself to do it. So that was the biggest change. But the other change I've found out in my notes is that the character of Hukuma Homoka, played by the amazing Tim Curry, isn't in the novel either. So
I did for confusion effect.
Yeah. So just a quick background on Amy the Ape. So yes, the Frank Marshall, despite all the work on Jurassic Park, they quickly realize it's not the same thing, that CGI is limited. Yes, it can do scaly dinosaurs at night, but it can't accurately reproduce fur very effectively. And if you look at, I think it was in the same article that you and I read, there's some great articles on Den and Geek, written by Simon Brew and Ryan Lambie from a few years ago. They clearly have a soft spot for this film. But they point out that if you look at where CGI was, Jumanji, which came out the same year, is a very good example of that, because the monkeys and the animals and that, the CGI just isn't there. It still looks very cartoony.
Yeah.
So yeah, for this they decided to go, whereas Stan Winston had done the animatronic dinosaurs for Jurassic Park, so they go back to him. And it seems like there's a bit of an ongoing rivalry. I mentioned Rick Baker before, between Rick Baker and Stan Winston, because it seems like Rick Baker, because of stuff like King Kong, and he did American Werewolf in London, but he also did Gorillas in the Mist and a Tarzan movie. Rick Baker was the ape guy, whereas Stan Winston was the robot guy.
Okay.
And Stan Winston was like, well, I want to prove to, you know, everyone, the industry, that it's not just Rick Baker, I can do it as well. So he jumped on it, and they spent, you know, months doing this animatronic Amy, and Paramount was so sold on it, they took Amy the Ape into a shareholders board meeting saying, meet our latest star. It was nuts.
That is somebody in a suit, right?
It's somebody in a suit. We joke about it, put a suit on a monkey.
Yeah, guy in a monkey suit.
No, okay. It's a monkey inside a monkey suit, Charlie. So yes, no, it's an actress inside an animatronic suit. A few sound bites from Stan Winston, and he sounds like he's not happy about how the grey apes in particular didn't end up on camera. He says due to lighting. He said so much of his success of these characters that we create depend on lighting and setting. I wasn't at all happy with the grey's environment, the grey apes. The Big Red Cave didn't allow for interesting or dramatic lighting at all. As wonderful as they could have been, they wound up looking like a bunch of guys running around in grey fursuits, mainly because the limitations of the set and the lighting. So Stan Winston,
the fact that they were a bunch of guys running around
in ape suits. But apparently they'd spent ages sculpting all these particular faces for all the grey apes, and gave them all interesting quirks and individuality. And I would argue Frank Marshall's, well, he's done a few films. Frank Marshall did Arachnophobia, he did Alive, he did this, but it's a fairly, like, he's produced so many films. Like, as I say, he's, you know, Spielberg's producing partner. You know, he did the Indiana Jones series. I think he also produced the Bourne series, and he's still the producer of Jurassic Park. So he's a very successful producer, but I think it's safe to say he's no Spielberg.
Just on that, I think when you watch this film and you realize that this was coming after Jurassic Park, and how it's not about the technology. When you look back, because we've obviously reviewed it here on the podcast, but how good it still looks today.
Yeah.
The fact that he does a great mix of mixing. Obviously, he had the best CGI going in the business, because it was leading edge back then. But it's the other stuff where this film falls down. Like, I don't know about you, but I was waiting. I just felt at the end that you don't see the grey gorillas. It's all blurred. It's all badly lit.
It's really badly edited.
It's like terror. It's like blinking. You miss. It's like they're over there. They're over there. Shoot. They're over there. Explosion. Ah, they're coming. Ah, my arm. Ah, you don't see anything. It's terribly edited. And the only thing that annoys me is the fact the actors don't look as confused as I do.
You know? Well, it's nuts if you think that they spend so much time with the character of Amy, which for all intents and purposes and all this effort they've put in, it still looks really pony. It still looks, it's clearly a person in a suit. It's there's no any point in your mind you go, well, actually it could be.
Did you not suspend belief even a little bit of time at the beginning?
I mean, when it was,
I did at the beginning. I was like, is that a real ape?
And then it started drinking a martini on a plane. And then started smoking a cigar. And then it started skydiving with Ernie Hudson.
Oh, come on. When was the last... When have you not wanted to see a gorilla skydive with Ernie Hudson?
I mean, yeah, this film is crazy. You've got, as you say, everyone is... It feels like they're acting in different films. You've got Joe Don Baker screaming at everyone and everything in his tiny little comms room.
Well, he's trying to get... He employs 40,000 people, Josh.
And with that kind of a diamond, we could dominate the telecommunications industry. They do not explain how the diamond...
Magazines! Printing! Books!
The logic and the desperation in this guy is very patchy about... Is it like the laser's going to communicate information? I don't know. Something to do with satellites.
Don't worry your pretty little head about that right now, George.
And the way he convinces Laura Linney to go, which is like, well, you've got to go and you've got experience and you're going. She's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. It's like this. The thing is, I think that I would definitely agree with is that I mean, we haven't even started to talk about Tim Curry, who is...
Not yet.
He has a mixture of motivation, shall we
and
say.
And a mixture of accents.
Yeah, because he's not sure whether he's Russian,
German, Romanian,
or in some parts just plain old African, you know, because Zinj.
Zinj, the lost city of Zinj. He really devours the dialogue. Love it.
But I love how he keeps on popping up. It's like, we need some comic relief. With these, like, and Ernie Hudson as well. He's like...
Ernie Hudson is leaning into it. He's having
a great time. He's having an absolutely great time. He's like, I'm getting paid. This is my film.
I'm not sure what his accent is either. I think it's going a little bit British at times.
Well, it's going very British at times. And if not, it's American. Don't you worry about that, young fellow. Yeah. He's having a fantastic time.
Yeah, he's the, like... Him and Tim Curry, for different reasons, are the best things in this.
I like a bit of Delroy Lindo.
Delroy Lindo is a cameo. Like, he literally turns up for that one scene, shouts at Tim Curry.
Joey Pants doing walking dialogue. Yeah. What do you do? I'm Joey Pants. I do walking dialogue. You ready for some walking dialogue?
You want me to buy some stuff for you?
I can buy some stuff for you. I'm Joey Pants.
Great to see him, even if it's a tiny role. Delroy Lindo, a very small role for Bruce Campbell at the start as well, which is a real shame.
Is he like, not? He's not Ash, but he's been He's been in the Spider-Man films, Sam Raimi, Evil Dead or Walking, no, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead. He's, Bruce Campbell's a legend, and it's why one of those things, like, he's one of those people that should have been in more bigger things, but I think he's just quite happy being a sort of cult B-movie actor.
Yeah, he's earned his stripes. What else needs to be said about this film that we haven't already covered, George?
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe it's 12-year-old me, but I remember the bit with the laser gun at the end being a lot cooler. But again, it's just sort of, as you say, the action's really badly edited. And it's a really weird, it's clearly a, like, a, I don't know if they like were running out of money, but it feels like a cheap set. It feels like something out of Star Trek.
As I said to you, I was like, I got to the end of the film, and I was like, did I fall asleep? Because I think I did fall asleep when the credits were rolling, and then I rewound the film, and I was like, nope, I watched it all. I basically just couldn't believe that was the film.
Yeah, it's tonally all over the place. It's not a complete disaster that you're laughing at it unintentionally.
No, I'd say for like two thirds of the film, you're like, where is this going? And then it's like, okay, where's the stupid gorilla going to take them? What's going to happen? There's got to be some big showdown. What's it building up to? And then when it gets that moment, that's, I think, when everybody collectively checks out.
Yeah, I mean, there's the bit that's obviously been done, and like it borrows from so many other greats. You know, it takes a lot from Indiana Jones. There's a bit from Aliens with the sentry guns. You know, that's probably one of the better scenes.
Yeah, the amazing setup of the nets. This is like Predator.
Yeah, but it's like they've already got lasers. They've got like laser defenses. So why do they need more lasers?
They need the next generation of lasers, George.
For telecommunications industry.
For reasons.
But yeah, it feels like they could have done so much more in that last act. They could have had a bit more of a lean, because there are obviously elements of the, you know, of horror, but they could have lent into that more. Like it could have been people being picked off. They could have been stuck in the mines or the temple for a bit longer.
The diamond mines. That did occur to me, that Simpsons episode, a few times watching this.
Tell us about the diamonds.
Do you think that Simpsons episode references this? No. It's totally unrelated.
No. So, yeah, I think it's just, it's such an oddity, this film, that...
It's not bad. Can I just say that? It's not bad.
No, it's like a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And I'll die on that hill.
Yeah, I will as well. You will watch it for the combined quality of actors that are in this film, the combined quality of producers and directors and writers that are behind this film. And then you'll get to the end and you're just sort of scratching your head going, okay, so this was how films were made in 95. Yep. If you had a Jurassic Park combo.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's part of me that I was asking myself.
Based on a strong book.
I was like, would they ever remake this film? Even with, as you say, you know, you talk about the latest technology with, you know, the Andy Serkis, the Planet of the Apes stuff. You can do the ape quiz. Like, no, because it's so bonkers. You wouldn't do it now.
You think the only thing this thing was missing was good CGI. I'm not so sure.
Well, that's it. It's just like, even if you got the ape right, it would still be a bonkers film. And I think because in that sort of true Michael Crichton fashion of, oh, it has to be, it's got to be a magic tech MacGuffin and a tech corporation. And I feel Michael Crichton is very much of a time as well.
Yeah. I think you're right. They planned for everything, but they didn't plan for the evil scientist with the drugs and the lasers.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you've got the angry CEO, because I think we talked about in the Jurassic Park.
You talked about Kathleen Kennedy.
Touché. You got the Joe Don Baker angry CEO. And I think we talked about this in Jurassic Park, that in the novel, John Hammond is very much in that vein that Spielberg changed it out. So he's a bit of a more sympathetic character with Dickie Attenborough. But yeah, this is full. Where's my money? I want Joe Don Baker devouring the scene.
He wants his Goldeneye money.
He wants his sweet same year. So yeah, if you think about other films that came out this year, you had Batman Forever, Goldeneye. So yeah, there was stiff competition, but this film, I think it was a budget of $50 million, and it made $150 million worldwide. And I think at the time it was Paramount's biggest opening weekend at the time, so it didn't make Jurassic Park money, but it was still a success.
Definitely washed its face. Yeah,
yeah, it's a monkey face.
Any, I'd love to know, was there anybody who said no to this film? Were there any significant
there's loads of could've wished. I mean, obviously I was thinking, do I skirt around it and not reveal it? But obviously it's very interesting to think that Crichton wrote it with Connery in mind for the Ernie Hudson role. And ironically, it was inspired by Alan Quatermain, which Connery would go on to play in his final role, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
But Connery would have been perfect. He's been putting black actors in their place since he was in Dr. No. Quato, fetch my shoes. Yeah, he would be right at home.
because I think in the novel he's described as like half white, half Indian or something like that. I'm just like,
Connery could easily pass for Indian.
Connery seamlessly transformed into a Japanese man in Few Only Live Twice. So.
Exactly. But
other people considered, so we'll get into full coulda, woulda, shoulda now. So what is coulda, woulda, shoulda, Charlie?
Coulda, woulda, shoulda is where George enlightens us on the actors who were considered for roles, contacted for roles, on everybody's call lists, but for the good grace of God, did not get those roles.
So yes, we've talked about Sir Sean Connery was always in frame when Michael Crichton was trying to get it off the ground.
Would he be getting ready to make 90s soft porn Rising Sun?
Yes, well, that's the thing. Ironically, same year, I think, as Jurassic Park. So obviously there was, with the success of Jurassic Park, there was that scrabble to make Michael Crichton films. So I think Rising Sun was already in production, but I think Jurassic Park had come out. I think the book came out in 91. So I think there was a lot of buzz. Then Disclosure, the one you mentioned, that came out in 94. And then this, 95. And then Sphere, I want to say, is 97. Timeline, 2003. And I'm not sure if there's any other sort of big Michael Crichton ones that we've missed. Obviously, there's the Lost World Jurassic Park, which he... Michael Crichton was very... savvy at like writing books that he clearly knew were going to be made turned into films. He's quite a cinematic writer, but yes, I think some people would say he always had, because he was a screenwriter and a director, he always had one eye on, oh well, if I write this, yes, it could easily be made into a film.
One begets the other.
Yeah,
your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
But anyway, coulda, woulda, shoulda. So for Monroe Kelly, outside of Sean Connery, we had Warren Beatty. For the role of Dr. Peter Elliott, we talked about him before. Bruce Campbell auditioned for him, but was given the smaller part of Charles Travis at the start. But also someone that was very big in the mid-90s, Hugh Grant declined the role of Dr. Peter Elliott as the ape doctor. And then for Karen Ross, a who's who of 90s actresses, so Samantha Mathis, Robin Wright, Kelly Preston, and Susan Sarandon were amongst many names considered. But yeah, I say it went through, it was offered to a few directors in the 80s. Spielberg was one, but also one of our favorite cult directors that we've been spending a bit of time with in the past year, John Carpenter.
Oh, wow.
He was considered, as well as Peter Hyams. He of...
Time Cop fame.
Time Cop fame, as well as and Sudden Death and other non-Van Damme movies, like Outland with Sean Connery. So, yes, there's a lot of coulda, woulda, shouldas there.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that other than if you mix them all together, could you just imagine a film where you've got, like, yeah, just Sean Connery leading them all into some half-assed monkey trial? Yeah. Yeah, don't even believe it.
But, well, obviously, we're keeping Tim Curry, right?
We're not only keeping
Tim Curry is refusing to leave set.
We're not only keeping him, but we are reinserting him into other films.
We are beefing up his role. You cannot get rid of me.
The Zinge line to me is the way that he's like, are you in on the joke? Maybe.
I think he's clearly having a lot of fun. And it wouldn't surprise you that I think none of this film was filmed in Africa or even Central Africa.
Oh, wow.
when they arrive at Central Africa Airport.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, yeah, it's Africa's a country, right? No, no, it's not. It's a series of countries. Oh my God. Yeah, so that a lot of it was a crazy time. I like to think that film got a bit more sensible in the years that would follow. It got a bit more competitive. There was some downsizing.
But I think that's it. That's what I love about, you know, the fact with this podcast, we're mainly concentrating on the 80s and 90s. And this is a pure example of 90s Hollywood, of the high concept. Well, we need, you know, it wasn't the age of, you know, we keep banging on about we're in the age of, you know, lots of superhero films. This was, okay, what hit novels are out? What have we got? Like, who's got the latest, you know, Michael Crichton's working on a new one. Let's
who's gonna,
that.
Yeah, who's going to say no to the writer of Jurassic Park? Nobody. Okay. $5 million.
I want that Jurassic Park money. What's it about? It's about apes. Do it. Do it. Make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we make it? Doesn't matter. Shut up and make it. Sean Connery's interested. Okay, here's the budget. Yeah, go make that movie.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, we've got the producers. We've got, you know, producers of Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park. Make it happen.
So much bullshit. Yeah, but it's what dreams are made out of. Okay. Luckily, well, at the time of recording, no spin-offs. But we know that Kathleen Kennedy listens to this podcast, and she's going to call up Andy Serkis and say, I want my Jurassic Park money. I think that's what she...
I want a Congo Legacy series that we'll put on Disney Plus and then pull a year later. Oh, no, that's Willow.
Be like, Andy, what? Can you do the thing in the suit with the ping pong balls on it? Can you come and do the motion cap thing?
Speaking of which, so there's the new... this is sort of, sorry, side tangent, but, you know, they're bringing out a new Planet of the Apes movie this summer.
That's and not that wide a tangent to go from this to Planet of the Apes.
That's true. But I was just like, I think I said to you when we talked about it in our...
is this Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, yeah. And I said, there's no Andy Serkis, there's no Matt Reeves, I'm not particularly interested. And then I saw on my YouTube, it popped up, it was a featurette on Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and the screen grab, the thumbnail, was of Andy Serkis. And I was like, oh, he is involved. Clicked on the video, and it's just talking about the legacy of Planet of the Apes, and that's why they put Andy Serkis in. He's not involved, as far as I know, still not involved in this new one. So I'm just like,
I'm getting flashbacks of James Cameron wearing a Hawaiian shirt promoting T... Was it T4? No, it was T5.
It was Genesis, yeah.
It was Genesis.
If you go to the cinema, you should watch this film.
If you enjoyed the Terminator sequels and you're interested to see a new film about it, you really have to see this. Yeah. Anyway, for legal reasons, we can't say it from, you know, everything he said. So, okay, I feel like we've... we've bongoed the Congo to death. It's a batshit crazy film. I think we both agree, it's not a bad film. I would give it 2.5 out of 5.
I put 5 out of 10. So we're aligned.
We are aligned. Yeah,
5 stars out of 10.
5 stars. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's certainly not a great film, but it's a lot of fun, and it's a proper throwback to, they certainly don't make films like this anymore, but probably for a good reason.
And just a little nugget that I was waiting until the end of the episode, thanks to the issues in availability here in Europe, it's now in our shared Amazon library forever.
Forever.
Whenever you've got a dull moment, George, just chuck it on. You can watch you like.
Well, no, I own it on iTunes, and I think I picked it up for a few quid, but I did say to myself after watching it, I was like, I'm not sure how soon I'm going to watch that again. But
I'm not sure iTunes is forever like Amazon, but yeah.
Yeah.
So are you trying to tell me that we have copies of... Oh, you're talking about something else on iTunes?
No,
we have 2 digital copies on 2 different. Well, at least we've got redundancy built in there. If Amazon or Apple goes under, as long as it's only one of them, we've got Congo forever.
Exactly. And who's going to be laughing now?
Yeah, I'm certainly not laughing. Okay. Brilliant. Anything else that we need to promote, mention, or edit?
We have a bit of a blank spot for next month for the regular podcast.
Oh, don't tell them that. They'll be sending in their suggestions.
I know. We've got some, someone came up with some suggestions I'll share with you off mic. But yeah, you know, we've done a bit of a mixture of stuff this year. We've done The Terminator. And on Patreon, we did a feature on the less successful Terminator sequels from T3 onwards.
That's your opinion.
That's my opinion. Other opinions may vary. But yes, let us know if you do have suggestions for the main podcast. Please do let us know. We'll be available on the usual channels. We're on Facebook, Twitter. I'm not calling it X. Instagram, YouTube. So yes, if you do have any ideas, what are your thoughts on Congo? Let us know. Are there any other Michael Crichton films that we should cover? We do have Rising Sun on the list.
We haven't done Sphere yet. We haven't.
Sphere, I remember, again, is a starts off well, but then I don't know if it's just the reveal isn't, but I felt it gets a bit boring towards the end.
I don't know. I think we could cover that film. Could just forget. Yeah, I mean, as a plot device. I think, let's get... I mean, obviously, when we get to the Michael Douglas marathon...
Oh, God.
We will cover Disclosure and everything else that he's ever done.
All I know from Disclosure is that there's a scene where, because it's the mid-90s, he has to be... He enters... He's trying to
virtual reality.
He's deleting files in virtual reality to make it more exciting. Anyway, yes, stay tuned. But let us know if you have any suggestions. Thank you for listening. I've been George.
I've been Charlie B. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And who are you, sir?
Erkema Homolka, formerly of Romania, free now of the chains of Ceausescu, traveling the world and doing good.
You may call me Mr. Homolka.
As a young man, I found a book in Soviet Georgia. It contained a detailed drawing of the city of Zinj.
What is this?
It is the city of Zinj.
City of Zinj.
The city of Zinj.
The city of Zinj. Have your laughing, and I will have mine.
No, no! The diamonds are here!